Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm Delcherie Gladden. I'm an author, a journalist, an editor. And on this week's episode, I have Dr. Gerald Yonas, and he is going to be talking about his second book, but first fiction book that's been released through Artemisia Publishing. Gerald, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about my first attempt at fiction. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Many of the events and characters in this were based on my 60 years of real-life experiences, working on tech challenges, including fusion, many different kinds of weapons, nuclear weapons, etc. And I worked with the private sector, national labs, the government, and serving on congressional committees. What happened was the pandemic forced me to sit here at home doing nothing. So I decided, what the heck? I'll write a book. And so I used a lot of what I experienced, but I mixed it with a lot of exaggeration and humor and satire. And Jeff was kind enough to agree to publish the book. And so I'm happy to talk about it.
I was looking up on your website and some information about you, and you have a unique perspective on this topic, having been involved in research into weapons and energy, and you've been a part of some pretty major programs in the history of the United States. Tell us a little bit more about, because you have your first book, Death Rays and Delusions, is more biographical. It talks about some of your real life experiences. And the new book, The Dragon's Claw, is a more fictional version, as you said, with some liberties and making that into a different type of story than your personal experiences. So tell us a little bit about the process of writing that first book and then taking a different view with fictional characters put into some of those situations that you really did live.
My first book, Death Rays and Delusions, was a true account of many of my experiences in working for Ronald Reagan. I called myself Ronald Reagan's Ray Gun. I was asked, after he gave his speech in 1983 about his proposed program to make nuclear weapons impotent and obsolete, I was totally surprised and shocked and amazed and couldn't believe it, because I'd worked in the field of so-called death rays or beam weapons for 20 or more years, and nothing seemed to work. And then he gives this speech that we're going to develop this technology, and we're going to somehow provide a shield against these ballistic missiles. So turns out I was asked by Harold Agnew, the former head of Los Alamos, to work on a committee to put together a program plan, which we did. And that's where many things that I recount in my book really happened. Many of the events were hard to believe, so I wrote about them in this autobiographical version. But then I figured, what the heck? I can make them even more outrageous and use it in a fictional novel. But it's hard to make some of the events more outrageous than what really happened. It was easy to write.
It was probably, I would imagine, kind of a fun outlet to discuss in a different way some of those experiences that you did find a little bit unbelievable.
For instance, in my, I don't want to give too much away about the fiction, but in the book, the hero is accused by a slightly nutty reporter of being in cahoots with the aliens and developing technology for the alien spacecraft that we were hiding from the American public. I hate to tell you this, but it's true. It really happened. I was accused by a reporter using my knowledge of technology and helping the aliens. And in fact, we were hiding the alien spacecraft. Now, that's a true story, but I embellished it a bit in my novel. There are many really fun things about my interactions with foreign governments and the United States government that are included in the novel, slightly exaggerated or mostly exaggerated.
You know, I imagine it's a topic that can get people pretty fired up. There's a lot of strong opinions surrounding weapons research in general, especially when you take it to those higher levels where they can potentially cause great harm and damage. And that's something that you touch on. You bring up some of these more difficult topics in the book. And I'm guessing you did deal with a lot of that in your real life work as well, learning how to have those conversations with both governments or media or just the public in general.
I found that I was attacked when I worked in the government and worked with this so-called Star Wars program. Really, the boss was Ronald Reagan. It was his idea. And I was accused of being slightly off base, or maybe very much off base, by both the left, far left and the far right. And everybody thought I was doing the wrong thing and supporting the wrong thing. And I thought, that's great. I'm right in, I'm opposed by everybody. It's got to be pretty much the real thing. What I found is that when I became involved in national level technology development, is that technology was all really not that important. Much of the discussions were social, political, economic, psychological. Of course, there was some technology, but it's amazing that many of these problems really are unsolvable. And the outcome depends on the psychology of the participants. In the case of the end of the Cold War, it came down to the interaction between Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev. And they two gentlemen were probably the only two people in the world who really agreed to eliminate all nuclear weapons. That was their philosophical approach. And the technology was also important, but it was really about the social, political, and economics of eliminating nuclear weapons. Very few people really understood that. They still don't understand it today.
I think that's very true. It's a very multifaceted issue, and it's hard to, I think, get everybody on the same level of understanding of all of the various components that go into the development, the use, the negotiations surrounding it between the different parties involved. It's hard to imagine being in the middle of that and trying to navigate all of those different sides.
Well, there is one technique that I found necessary to navigate the extreme foolishness of the far left and the far right, and that was humor. In fact, I was a bit of a prankster, and I tried to have people enjoy the mess that we were in. There was one person who really appreciated my sense of humor, and that was General Colin Powell, who worked for Secretary Weinberger. He had a good sense of humor, tremendous sense of humor, great guy. Every once in a while, my boss would kind of wish he hadn't, General Abramson, wish he hadn't got involved with me, because sometimes he was the victim of some of my pranks. But if I hadn't used humor, I couldn't remain sane. It was pretty nutty stuff.
I bet.
I've reflected that in my fiction.
So before I jump into more questions about the new book, just give a brief overview of the idea of the story without giving too much away, so readers who haven't had a chance to read it yet kind of get a feel for the story and the characters.
The story is about the discovery of clean, cheap, inexhaustible source of energy. It's also very timely because now the press is filled with reports of government and private institutions investing in fusion research as the ultimate answer to our energy problems and the solution to the climate crisis. But this is a fictional solution to the energy problem, and that is cold fusion. And now it's called low energy nuclear reactions. And at first that was a hoax, or thought to be a hoax, but now it's actually research is being funded. So the book is all about low energy nuclear reactions, discovery of a new source of energy. Of course, every new discovery in physics also has weapons applications. And so this story is the struggle between those people who want to spend money on the weapon application and the protagonist of the book. The hero of this story, Alec, really wants to apply the technology to the ultimate energy application. But he finds that the big money, the congressional support, the support from his boss, the director of the laboratory, they're really more interested in the weapons application. That's where the money is. So it's a struggle over energy applications versus weapons applications. And the line in the book that's repeated often is, technology is like a knife. Knife can be used to butter your bread or slit somebody's throat. And it's the struggle, mental and political and sociological, economic struggle over applying technology.
And I think that's, like you said, a very timely discussion. It's been something that's been an issue, I think, throughout history from the time that, you know, technology and weapons came into play.
Particularly timely now with the release of the Oppenheimer movie coming out shortly from Los Alamos. And my book is about Los Alamos. It's all fiction, of course. but it's about the struggle between those people who want to ban the use of nuclear weapons, eliminate the nuclear weapons, or apply it to even more lethal weapons, namely going from the atom bomb to the hydrogen bomb. And Oppenheimer was opposed to going ahead with the hydrogen bomb, and Edward Teller was advocating development of the hydrogen bomb. So that's timely. Another thing that's very timely is a recent discovery at Lawrence Livermore Lab of fusion ignition using the National Ignition Facility. And so that's very much in the papers today. Another one is the controversy about having Chinese employees at Los Alamos who returned to China and accusations that the Chinese are stealing our intellectual property constantly. And so many of the issues in the fictional book are far more timely than they were even 10 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think it's nice that it's presented in a way that I think is accessible to a lot of readers to start getting an understanding of some of these topics in a setting that doesn't immediately fire up those antagonistic discussions that often make it difficult to have a real discussion about a topic. You provide a lot of information within the story through the characters, which I found was interesting because it was a lot of stuff I'm not very familiar with, but it was interesting to learn at least some of the basics about some of these ideas and the different aspects that are involved in the overall process of their development and use. And it didn't feel like it was overwhelming, which was nice because sometimes that can be the case with something that has a lot of technical information in it. And I felt like it gave a good, just kind of basic grasp and understanding of what you were talking about without overwhelming a reader who's not familiar with those topics.
What I tried to do was to have a character who really was not a physicist, who would ask questions. And then whoever she was talking, this was the undercover FBI agent, Gabby Stebbin. And who, by the way, everybody, well, I'll ask you, who was your favorite character?
That is a tough one. I did enjoy Gabby a lot. She provided everybody, a good balance to everybody.
Everybody likes Gabby. She is very intelligent and asks very good questions, which gives an opportunity for her technical colleagues to explain the physics or the technology to her in an understandable manner. So that was the method I used to explain things. So Gabby was very important in asking the right questions.
That's often a hard technique to figure out how to use and to employ, especially dealing with topics that you really have to get a lot of information out for the reader to understand what's going on. It can be really easy to just dump a bunch of info on the reader. It's hard to take it in when there's too much at once. And so it's nice when you have that character who can give little bits of information at the right time.
And it also helps that people like that character, and everybody likes Gabby. And she was a track star at Espanola High School, and so people can relate to that. She's a real person.
Yeah.
In fact, in writing this book, all of the characters became very real to me. They became people I knew, friends of mine, enemies of mine. Even General Wu, who was the antagonist, I became to the point where I knew and understood these people and how they thought and what they did, and I became sympathetic to their behavior. And it's my first experience in writing fiction, but that was an interesting experience. And in fact, there are more books to come because at the end of this book, the reader is left hanging. Now what? And so these characters develop, and I won't reveal what happens, but it really continues to be an interesting relationship between my imagination and the characters. For me, they're real people.
Absolutely. I think a lot of writers experience that, and you put so much time and effort into developing who these characters are and helping them learn and grow and change. They really do become part of you.
That's true. And there are surprises. There are events that happen that change people's lives. That's unavoidable. And they grow and they develop. And Alec, the protagonist, really develops. He starts off as a total wimp and becomes quite an interesting personality. I like him, but I like Gabby more than Alec, let me tell you that.
Yeah, Alec was an interesting character because he starts off in the book really kind of still recovering from some things that have happened in his past, and I don't want to give that away. But he's really not fully recovered, and he's still in this mindset of, I have to find a way to make up for things or fix things. And it really seems to affect just who he is at that point in his life. And he's a little bit more, I guess the right words might be, like, he's got some strong beliefs, but he doesn't really know how to stand up for himself and to push for what he wants and to take those stands that you feel like he wants to take. He wants to be the one to say, no, this is what I'm doing. This is the application it's meant for. I don't want to see my work turned into something destructive. But that's a really hard thing for him at the beginning.
He also has a problem with his relationship with Gabby. And in this book, it's not resolved. So you have to buy the next book, fortunately, to understand how everything gets resolved. It's kind of, in writing this, it was not clear how he would evolve, how he would deal with his angst, his problem with technology, and his problem with relationships. It's not clear. And fortunately, you have to buy the next book to kind of find out. Or maybe the book after that. I'm planning a series of 3 or 4 books total.
Thanks.
And I will be learning along with the reader, developing the story and the technology. There's plenty of technology that I didn't use in this book because I have almost 60 years of experience in science and technology. And believe it or not, I'm going to get it all in. There's going to be one of the reviewers of the book said that my writing reminds him of H.G. Wells and a little bit of Joseph Heller. And I think that's correct. I've got the satire of Catch-22 and the imaginary technology of H.G. Wells. But a lot of this technology is happening now, and I think most of it will happen in our lifetime, one way or another.
It's one that does seem to be progressing quickly.
Faster than I can imagine. I hope one thing that's happening is people are saying that AI is going to be writing books, in which case I better get mine printed on the street before people say, oh, well, that was some computer wrote that.
That's a good point. It's definitely a topic of discussion among creative arts, as well as some of the technological sides of things. It's one I've been keeping an eye on and following. So I see where you're coming from there. It's an interesting development for technology that I think a lot of us didn't see really becoming a big factor or something to worry about until all of a sudden it really just kind of exploded. And you're like, oh,
well,
this is something we have to think about.
it really didn't get exploded. It was exploded by the press looking for a story. But the evolution of computers and the interaction between computers and humans was written about some years ago by a man named Kurzweil, who wrote about the coming singularity when computers can outthink humans. Mm-hmm. That's been around for quite a long time.
True.
And so I've been thinking about to one up this AI revolution, and I've got that in a book I'm now working on. So AI is not the end of it. And computers outthinking humans is not the end of it. There is another wrinkle. By the way, there's always another wrinkle. There's always a new idea. This is not the end of invention of science and technology. It may be happening faster now than it ever happened before, but there's no end to it. This story will continue to evolve. There's plenty of material for more books.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm glad to hear that you're planning several more. I did want to ask you, with this being kind of your first foray into fiction, what was that process like of learning how to structure the story overall and develop those character arcs? Did you have a background in fiction before you started this, or has this been a new learning process for you?
I have to admit this. I have no experience writing fiction, although many of my critics read my technical articles and accused me of making up stories. But nevertheless, I've written a lot of articles, dozens of articles. When I was in the government working for Ronald Reagan in the Pentagon on the Star Wars program, I had to give speeches practically every other day on this program that was based on Ronald Reagan's notion of how to change the world. And I had a lot of experience in talking to the press and writing articles. It wasn't fiction, but it was unbelievable. I also have written many other published articles on fusion and beam weapons and advanced technology. And in fact, I've been writing a blog called SDIGuy.blog, which is available to anybody who wants to get on board and read it. And it is, I like writing. And so for me, I just did what I've always been doing, except I embellished it with characters that weren't real in science and technology that was totally unrealistic. I've never taken a writing course. However, I have to tell you the truth, I have relied on many things I learned as an undergraduate at Cornell University. At Cornell, I was an engineering physics student, but that was a five-year program. And the reason why it was 5 years instead of four-year engineering program is 1 year was liberal arts. And so in that extra year, I did a lot of fabulous courses in philosophy and literature and economics. So maybe that was my background.
Well, it's great to have that. I think it's nice to have a well-rounded approach to just learning in general. And I think there's that perception for a lot of people of the sciences are more technical mindset and the creative arts is, you know, well, creative and more exploratory. But really, especially in the field that you're in, with a lot of discovery and looking for new projects and how to develop something and take it further, there's a lot of creativity in that. There's a lot of exploration. It really requires a lot of critical thinking, but also, you know, thinking outside the box and pushing those boundaries. And so I think there's a lot of connection there.
Well, one thing that I learned in the last dozen or so years is that all important problems, not some important problems, all important problems are wicked. By that I mean, and wicked is a term that's beginning to be used more widely, wicked problems are problems that have social, political, economic, and technical factors that need to be considered. Name any problem at all, and you'll find out that wicked problems have no easy closed-form solutions. And when you work on a wicked problem, the most important thing is to define, not the answer, but you have to start by defining the question. And maybe that's something I learned over my many years. The hardest part is determining what exactly is the question. And then once you understand the question, it may be very complex, then you begin to work on the solution. You shouldn't start to work on a solution until you totally understand the question. But then you find very rapidly that you didn't really understand the question. So you go through periods of exhilaration, I know the answer, followed by total depression. I didn't really understand the question in the first place. So no matter what you see today in the invention of modern technology, whether it's ultimate energy supply or the ultimate space weapon, or lately AI as a threat to humanity, these are all wicked problems. And the important thing is to define the problem carefully before you begin to explore the solution. And so the total wickedness of the modern world, and wickedness is not a bad term. I gave a lecture at a Catholic high school. It was called Wicked Problems, and I could see the audience was rather uncomfortable, particularly the faculty, until I explained what it was. But people should, I think, go on Google, look up Wicked Problems and study it. I think modern engineering schools really need to have at least a few courses on dealing with wicked problems.
That would be a great way to introduce that and emphasize the need for looking at a lot of different approaches and the full extent of what an issue is. I think that would help just people in general who you can kind of tend to get focused in too narrowly on a problem and base all of your understanding or your opinion or beliefs on one aspect of something without considering the whole. And that makes it very hard to find those solutions when that's how something's being looked at.
Well, if you start off with a desire to explore and search for a solution to a wicked problem, and you admit from the beginning that there is no solution, but You have faith that you can find a way to make progress. If you start off with that approach, and that's what I try to do with my characters in my hopefully series of novels. People who will admit that there is no solution, but they also are willing to proceed down a path towards a solution. So every one of my characters, what they think is a solution, they're suddenly faced with, oh my goodness, look at that. That didn't work. And it's worse than I thought. So I try to do that twist, that new learning that the problem really isn't solved. And the nice thing about having a problem that isn't solved is you get to sell a lot of books.
Very true. So we're getting close to being out of time, but I wanted to ask you what the plans are for the rest of the series and if you have a timeline on the next book, which I know may be a little far out still.
The next book is called The Dragon's Brain, and it's largely about neurological problems that have a solution but don't have a solution, that have problems created by the solution. And the book has already been sent to Jeff Habiger for his review. It's been written, and I'm waiting to see what Jeff has to say. It's already done.
Oh, great.
And the book after that is also mostly finished. And one thing I've learned is it's hard to finish a novel. It's hard to really bring all the pieces together. And it's much easier to leave the reader hanging and not bring the pieces together, and then you sell another book. So we'll see. I don't know how well this is being received. I hope that the new book, so-called The Dragon's Brain, will be out before too long. It's in the hands of the publisher. Well, by the way, I really have to express my gratitude for his willingness to publish this book. What I found early on, I mean, I tried very hard to find an agent and to find a publisher before I found, fortunately, somebody interested. But it's almost impossible to publish a book. You've published, and I never figured out how to find an agent. Jeff did not need an agent, so that was important. It's a catch-22. You can't get an agent unless you've published, and you can't publish without an agent. So it's a really tough racket.
It is one of those difficult aspects of publishing that we'll see how that evolves over time. There's been a lot of changes in the publishing world in the last decade, especially. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But
well, my first book, Death Rays and Delusions, was published by Peter Publishing. If you look at the back of the book, you see the emblem of Peter Publishing. It looks strangely like a chihuahua, and it really is my dog.
Oh, cute.
So when people say, well, who published your first book? I said, my dog, the chihuahua, Peter. He's very, very understanding. Unfortunately, he passed away, which is very sad.
Oh, yeah.
So now I have to have a real publisher, but I can always go back to Peter Publishing if I have to.
True.
But it's really nice to have help from Jeff. He was great help.
Well, good. I'm glad that's been a good experience so far. And as we wrap up, I just wanted to remind readers that the book is called The Dragon's Claw by Dr. Gerald Yonas, and that's through Artemisia Publishing. And Gerald, where can people find you online to stay up to date on your writing and your other projects?
Okay, so I have a website. My daughter told me I needed a website. She knows the business. It's called projectzbooks.com. And that's where I will keep the readers informed. Also, I have a blog, sdiguy.blog. And those two are ways that I communicate with whoever's interested in what I'm thinking.
Great. All right. Well, I encourage readers to stop by your website and your blog and learn a little bit more about you in the book. And I look forward to seeing the next one. I'll have to keep in contact with you and Jeff to find out when that next publishing date is, and we'll chat again.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.